From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 433, Building a Data Warehouse on Azure with guest Michael Blumenthal. Recorded Monday, August 10th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm at that conference in Wisconsin Dells at the moment, and I've bumped into a Michael Blumenthal. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Richard.
Tell the folks a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
I am a technical solution evangelist at PSC Group, and what that means is that I help our clients with Microsoft Cloud and Curl Elaboration technologies.
Cool. So is that SharePoint in the cloud as well?
That's SharePoint in the cloud. That's Office 365.
Yeah.
The other thing I do is I do a lot of public speaking at conferences, so I've spoken at every SharePoint Saturday in the Chicago area. I've spoken at Code Camp and Chicago Coder Conference, and because of my involvement in the local technical community, Microsoft recently recognized me as an Office 365 MVP.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a good gig.
Yes.
We were talking a little bit about data warehousing as well, and I did data warehousing back in the day. I'm sort of a Ralph Kimball disciple.
Okay.
But these were multi-hundred-thousand-dollar, multi-year projects to scrub and transform data, put it all together. Tell me about your project. Did you go that way?
Kind of. The client that we were working with is a health insurance startup that started doing business summer of 2013.
So an Obamacare entity?
Yeah. Yeah. They serve about 30,000 of the poor of Washington, D.C.
Interesting. Okay.
And so they're working off of a local government contract. But they had this data situation where they had outsourced claims handling for all different kinds of claims.
Right.
Two different vendors.
So
they had medical claims handled by one vendor, vision claims by another, prescription by another, mental health by another. And so they had all these data silos. And they had no common view of a member. And by a member, I mean a person.
Oh, sure. Somebody who gets surgery done, gets medicine, and, you know, maybe some counseling. Boom, you're in three systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they had no way to pull the data together from the three systems and report on it. But, of course, they had regulatory requirements that required them to report on it.
Ah, okay.
So the CIO at the time brought us in, and we talked through the problem and said, okay, we need to build the data warehouse where we can create feeds that come in from all these different vendors and turn them into relational data that we can report on. Now, this company being a startup, they didn't want to buy a whole bunch of physical hardware. They didn't want to have to build a data center.
No.
That would have cost millions.
Yeah, especially if you're not already running one.
This is a huge deal. So, I mean, this was a startup. They had almost no infrastructure.
Yeah, there's a reason they outsourced all of that work
right,
as well.
Right. And so the CIO had previous good experiences with Microsoft technology, and so we said, let's look at Azure and consider this doing this on Azure. And so that's what we did. And we built a SQL Server data warehouse, and so we were using Azure IaaS, infrastructure as a service,
right,
rather than the SQL
Azure
Server
itself
as a service, right. So we did IaaS instead of PaaS because at the time the SQL as a service offering wasn't mature enough, didn't offer the integration services capabilities that we needed.
So I mean, if it was early days of SQL Azure, the data sets weren't that big. Like, there was pretty serious restrictions on SQL Azure.
So that's why we did a SQL, standing up our own SQL servers as VMs in Azure.
Right.
And
configure it your way.
Right. And we configure it our way. And so we set up a bunch of virtual machines. We set up a cluster. And the really cool thing about doing a cluster in Azure is that because Microsoft has multiple data centers that are connected with very high-speed connections, we could have one member of the cluster be in the East Coast data center, the other member of the cluster be in the West Coast data center, the monitoring server that checked the health of each one and initiated failover if there was a problem, we could have that in the South Central data center.
Right.
And so we had geographic fault tolerance, so if one of the data centers got hit by a meteor or something,
yep,
then everything would keep working.
Well, and I look at the Katrina case. I mean, all the data centers in New Orleans got shut down. You know, hurricanes happen.
Yeah. And so this gave us geographic fault tolerance for, I mean, a trivial expense compared to...
It costs you the same no matter what data you're sending you're in, really.
Right, right. And I mean, they think there's some cost for moving things between data centers, but compared to having to do any of this physically.
Oh, have you actually built all those?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's crazy.
So this is just the beginning. You're just taking in, you're just using integration services to pull in the data from the disparate sources. Mm-hmm. You're keeping them distributed so they've got some reliability. Yeah. You've got them running a cluster so they're all maintained.
Yeah.
How do you actually consolidate the information?
So, I mean, we brought things into staging tables and we had stored procedures that would move things around. We did have the benefit of everyone having an identifier that was consistent across this different system.
Oh, so the customer identifier was consistent. Dude, what a win!
Yes. Well, it was because it was a government-issued number.
Right. Okay, so it was abstracted from any of the given vendors.
Right. So that was what we could key off of. And so, yeah, so we brought this together. Then we were able to use reporting services to do reports. We looked at different ways that we could use Access as a front end, and then so again, because they had no on-premise things, with the exception of one or two Active Directory domain controllers that were also talking to domain controllers that we had in the cloud as virtual machines, but they had almost no on-premise infrastructure. So
it sounds like this is before Azure AD and so forth. So you actually ran VMs with AD in them?
Yeah, for their on-premise AD, and because by the time we got there, they'd already made some decisions that made that the best thing to do at the time.
Mm-hmm. Were the servers up in the cloud? Were they members of the domain?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so you had extended the domain
into the cloud. And for that way, we had fault tolerance if anything happened to one of their own physical locations.
Right.
But they didn't have an intranet based on anything on-premise. They were using SharePoint Online.
Right.
And so we were looking at different ways where we could expose the data that we were reporting on through to their SharePoint Online intranet.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at the time, there weren't that many options. And so we had an Access database where we stored the file and document library, and they could pull it down, open it up, and that would talk to their SQL servers in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and give us some reporting capabilities that way. We were using SQL Server reporting services for other reports. The reporting was one aspect of it, and through that, and sometimes it was just writing stored procedures that would produce the data that we needed, because in some cases it was, okay, the report is, you've got to put it in Excel, and then that gets emailed or uploaded someplace.
Right. So this is actually meeting government requirements for data.
Yes.
And they just wanted a spreadsheet.
Right.
So if you can generate the spreadsheet for them, so much better.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, before they had the system in place, they were trying to report on data that we're getting from one of their vendors, and their vendor was giving them tabular data in a Word document.
So they were taking a text file of commented delimited data or
tabbed delimited data, yeah,
and then dumped it into Word.
They dumped it into Word, and so in Word, every page had a header and a footer and rows of tabular data, but my client, they needed to be able to sum, sort, and filter on these things.
Right.
And the only way they could do it before we got on the scene was he was trying to copy and paste out of Word into Excel.
Probably 100-page plus documents. Yes.
It took, I think it was 9 days to deal with one of those.
And the risk Word. Of a mistake.
Yes.
Like the chances that data was accurate is
right.
So remote.
And that was the very first thing we did with them before we started, we got into the process building the data warehouse, which just helping them cope with that, where first I prototyped it with a PowerShell script, and then I ended up writing an Excel add-in. And the Excel add-in and the PowerShell script, what they did would, they took the Word document, they used Word automation to export it to a text file.
Right.
And then it just went through, and because things were so consistent, it just ripped out all the headers, and it left you with tabular data, which then you could parse out and bring into Excel as a CSV file.
Right.
And someone wants it in Excel, format as table, add a total row, finally you know how many records you have.
Yeah.
And you can do addition, you can do math on them, and you can filter and look for different things. And now you can manage and deal with the data. And it took something, just that piece, took something that was taking them 9 days and took it down to a matter of minutes.
Right. Yeah. Funny how big those wins are.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. And you were nowhere near the potential of the information. You were just, at that point, I think you're just removing dumbness.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
And so once we saw that, there, we could do create value that way. We looked at the bigger picture and said, okay, that's when we started understanding the need for the data warehouse.
Right.
And so we went and we
set
up all
this stuff.
So your customer
did not come to you with, I need a data warehouse.
No, they came to us with, we need to get these reports done.
Right. How do we get these reports done? And they were, like say, government mandated reports,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a much saner requirement. I get really worried when customers say, hey, we'd like a data warehouse. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yes.
They're not fun. They're necessary evils.
Yeah.
So is this actually using Azure data services or any of those types of things?
At this point, it's using entirely Azure VMs, infrastructure service. Yep.
Okay.
And I mean,
just so they don't need to own the hardware.
Right.
You get the failover. You get the reliability.
Yeah.
Do you find you're scaling up and down to during consumption periods? Like, you light up additional instances when you're going to load a lot of data?
Not yet. I mean, and that's something that certainly they could move to.
But they haven't needed to.
But they haven't needed to yet. I mean, at this point, we had a defined limit of okay, we're dealing with records for 30,000 members. We just need to focus on that and get that working.
Sure. And so everything that needs to be run to do that is running all the time.
Yeah.
At a sort of reasonable rate per month.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we put together this calendar.
I presume this
of,
is thousands of dollars a month, but not, they say, tens of thousands.
Well, let's see. Because this was Medicaid? I keep forgetting between CAID and CARE. but the District of Columbia was paying this organization a certain amount per member per month.
Right.
And it was on the order of millions of dollars.
That's what they were bringing in. I'm just wondering they had to pay to Azure to run all that. I mean, you're running a bunch of SQL servers.
Azure cost was? I never saw the bills for that.
Yeah. I just can't think it's that much. You think about enterprise SQL Server licenses and the hardware needed to run them for a distributed system.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. I mean, it was hundreds of dollars per month if you were running the SQL Server all the time.
Right.
For the production SQL Server, that's what we did.
Yeah.
Because every day we would get a new data dump from one of these vendors.
Right.
And so, I mean, we had actually one SFTP server and one FTPS server.
Right.
Because some would want to talk one, some wanted to talk to the other. So,
I mean, of course they did.
Yeah. But again, those were just VMs.
Yep.
And one of them was a Linux VM. Again, Microsoft's openness.
Doesn't matter.
And so we were, we had all these this data coming in, and we, again, created processes to bring it in, parse it out, and turn it into relational records you could actually report against.
Right. And you use integration services for the whole thing.
So yeah.
Not a lot of hand processing there.
No, not if you can help it.
Were you building really, I mean, you can go pretty nuts with integration services.
Yeah.
Did it get that hairy, or was this data pretty flat?
There was some data that was in a particular EDI format.
Right.
And so we actually worked with
Is this HL7 stuff?
No, not HL7.
Which you'd think.
But I want to say X10, but I'm probably getting my standards confused, and I've been away from it for a year, so forgive me.
Yeah, you better off.
Yeah. but it was this standard EDI format.
Yeah.
And so there was a third party vendor we were working with to process the EDI documents, because one of the vendors or two of the vendors were producing EDI documents for us. Some of the other ones were just doing CSV files through FTP. But this one vendor gave us EDI feeds, and the district wanted EDI feeds back and forth.
EDI feeds actually better? Is it a little more structured?
They're more structured, but that structure is standardized in as much as the problem is that standard has room for interpretation.
Which, that's the thing I found with HL7 every time. Everybody's got their own flavor of HL7.
Yeah.
And it's a non-standard standard.
Right. Exactly. It's the great thing about standards, there's so many to choose from.
Give me one second here, Michael, because I've got to pay the bills. Runners Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO. All one word at scriptrock.com/runasradio. All right. So we have this non-standard standard. Mm-hmm. So you basically, for every vendor, have got to come up with a way to parse the data.
Right. Absolutely.
So separate integration scripts for each one. We only had, what, 4 or 5?
Yeah, there were something between 5 and 7 vendors. One or two of them, each of them had at least one data feed that would provide us. Some of them had a couple data feeds.
Right.
And
the data's got to go to a certain depth, too. I mean, there's basic patient information. There's got to be...
Right. So, I mean, the dental data looked very different than medical data. Dental data had things like which tooth was affected, what procedure was done on which tooth.
Yep.
There were some other things that we brought in, which weren't even originally identified as a vendor data feed, but the government has a data feed of NPI numbers, national provider numbers, which are identifiers for every doctor. And so this was something that we weren't it wasn't originally identified as a data source, but as we discovered it, as we were getting familiar with the data, we realized that we should be bringing that in on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and cross-checking and providing things like, okay, here are new doctors that just got certified. Here are doctors who are no longer certified.
Interesting.
And helping the department that manages the providers in this health plan help them stay aware of changes in the doctor population.
Sure. Yeah, that's got to be part of the process. But probably not an initial top tier thing.
Right.
So were these feeds from the providers, or was it this is another feed entirely?
This was another feed that was one of the government sources.
Right.
They just published this big document and said,
here's who's in, here's who's out.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is classic data warehouse behavior too, is bit by bit you add more and more feeds and mm-hmm. the data becomes more valuable.
Yeah.
All right, so the disparate set of feeds, integration services, each of them running in their own sets of VMs. Mm-hmm. When it comes to querying across them, I mean, are you just using reporting services to pull from multiple sources?
Well,
or do you have some consolidated station databases?
Yeah, so I mean, right. So we end up creating a central database mm-hmm. and that had relationships that show, okay, patient has medical claims, patient has dental claims. Mm-hmm. We did have a central database that brought these in. We had the different systems, the FTP server, or FTPS server, the SFTP server, the EDI data feed processing program, all those fed into the integration, in some cases integration services, other cases just the SQL server, but we had the core SQL server that had the data, that had databases we created that had a model for a cohesive model for all this data.
So talk to me about the taxonomy of that. Is this a complete set of all of the data sources, or is it a subset? Are you aggregating?
It really was pretty complete. I mean, we represented everything we were getting from all the data sources, because we had to report on it all. It was really, again, driven by those reports.
Right.
So, I mean, if there was something
you knew what your final outputs were going to be.
Right.
But it means you know, to create a taxonomy that would handle all of those different data types. Or is it just a different set of tables? Dental data stored over here.
Yeah.
Medical health data stored over there.
Some of the taxonomy came from based on the taxonomies of the feeds we were getting
sure,
in.
Sure. And, you know, the main thing here is that instead of them being separate databases that were fed separately, now it's in one database with
a set and again,
tables.
The idea, the fact that the member was really at the center of it.
Right. With a common ID.
Yes.
You had the biggest problem every time we work on this stuff. Mm-hmm. I consolidating customer identification from multiple sources. That's the toughest part. So you had that one. And then it's just a lot of report writing.
Yes. Yep.
Do you get past the government requirements? Are there assets here for this company now to know more about their customers?
There certainly is. I mean, this customer has opportunities to data mine this data.
Sure.
And do things to improve patient outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things they look for is, okay, what part of the population has been visiting the hospital a lot? And let's look at why and see is there some of this population that is visiting the hospital because they're not seeing a primary care doctor?
Right.
And if so, let's make sure they have a primary care doctor assigned, and let's do some outreach things to encourage them to see that doctor first, earlier in the process, rather than waiting till things have gone really bad and right. then end up at the ER.
Take your kid to the pediatrician, don't take him to emergency.
Yes.
Right. Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, visibility to that's really interesting.
Yeah. And one of the other things we were able to do is using Excel and Power Map in Excel, we could pull down the member table and all the addresses and just paint that on a map.
Nice. So Power Map for providing geolocated data.
Yep. Yeah. And there were a couple of outliers, and potentially some of those outliers could indicate fraud.
Right. Right. Folks that probably shouldn't have been in a low income program.
Yep.
It's like you're kind of living in a neighborhood that doesn't actually make, but I got to imagine most of the data is clustered in those low income neighborhoods.
Yeah. I mean, you could see, I mean, most of the data fit the map outlines very well.
Were there much challenges around like HIPAA issues and stuff? What about the privacy of this data?
So, yes, it is medical information about people. And so, yes, it has to be handled carefully.
Mm-hmm.
When we had to exchange any of those data sets or discuss it, we tended to use encrypted emails.
Right.
We also made sure that whenever possible, data was encrypted at rest and in transit. So, like, as I think I said earlier, that we were using Access to do some reporting on this data. And so we made sure that that data connection, that ODBC connection, was over SSL.
Right. So they're doing their own connection. The incoming data, I mean, you're talking about SFTP and FTPS.
Right.
Those are encrypted FTP streams.
Right.
But are the files themselves at that point encrypted?
No.
Like that Word doc, I can't imagine, was encrypted.
Right. And so, no, it's the tunnel gets encrypted, but much of the data was not.
Right.
So we just handle it very carefully.
Do you have to destroy those log files at some point? Or they get zipped up somewhere with a password on them, put away? Like, after you've imported the data, do you need to keep them around?
We kept around the data for long enough that they could verify that all the data made it incorrectly.
Right.
After that, it could be destroyed. And depending on the data processing agreements you sign with Microsoft, you can get your Azure environment to comply with various data security
including
things.
HIPAA.
Yeah, including HIPAA.
Well, because, I mean, it's a lot of resistance from folks in specialties like healthcare to public cloud services.
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, for this organization at least, it was so much easier to get a higher level of data security by using Azure than whatever they could have done on-premise themselves.
Building themselves. I think that's a really interesting point. It's tough to build a high-security data center.
Very.
You know, that's a big, and it needs to be checked. You know, you need certification. Here's a group of people that have already done it, and for a fee, you can have it.
Right. And, I mean, Microsoft constantly penetration tests their own networks.
Right.
And I mean, if you read about that, it's fascinating stuff. Their red team versus their blue team. It just the things they go through, the measures they take, they're that, and because this is what they do day in, day out, and they've invested in it, they perform, their data center performs at such a high level of maturity. It is so costly for someone new to that practice to try to do that.
To try and get into that. It's almost a non-starter.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting to me that you've built this whole solution as an infrastructure as a service solution. Like, mm-hmm. Considering what the Azure team's done in the past couple of years.
So that's true. I mean, if we were going to do it again today, we certainly would have SQL as a service as an option.
Okay. And AD is, Azure AD
yeah.
services.
So, there were some things that AD decisions that they had made that the best way forward was to use on-premise AD and have have AD servers in the cloud to provide them fault tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But they were also looking at using a product called Okta to give the users a single sign-on experience for a variety of different things.
And the users in this case are the workers of the company.
Right, the health insurance company staff.
Right. Yeah. There's no customer facing.
No, not at this point. And that was one of the things that we were talking to them more about more recently was that they have a need to build a customer facing portal to allow customers, their members to manage some of their own data.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that continuing to evolve.
Oh, yeah.
I just think about all of the data analytic tools and data mining services and so forth that Azure's standing up today, mm-hmm. and think, you know, that's got to be really interesting
yeah.
to start saying, you know, do we migrate to some of this instead of running VM?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's certainly, and even with the data where it is, I mean, if you look at what they've done with Power BI and the latest release of Power BI and, you know, and or their machine learning things, I mean, what if you could teach the machine learning tools to detect fraudulent claims?
Yes. Which only makes sense, right?
Yeah.
To look for outliers, right? Mm-hmm. An address is obviously an outlier, but you
right.
only see it once you throw it on geodata.
Right.
But I bet there's other behaviors that could show up there.
Absolutely.
Especially between the things. I worked with an organization some time ago that was going after prescription abuse.
Mm-hmm.
They were going from pharmacy to pharmacy to pharmacy to get prescriptions filled multiple times. And
yeah.
So sharing that data on the back end to detect that was going on
yeah.
you know, became a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's particularly relevant in your scenario. But
it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly. I mean, prescriptions is one of the kinds of claims they handled.
Yeah. And it's a relatively small data set. I mean, 30,000 yeah. customers, it's nothing trivial, but it's not a huge, huge problem space. So what's coming next for you? You got other data warehouse projects?
I don't have any other data warehouse projects. I've actually been, since then, I've been helping an ISV in Chicago get value from their Office 365 tenant.
Mm-hmm.
I've been their SharePoint Online administrator for hire for the last several months, taking over that role from a coworker of mine who had served that role for the previous 16 months. And that's been a very completely different kind of thing, other than there are some interesting data analysis things that this client wants to do. But it's really been about working with people at the different department, at the level of different departments, to understand their business processes and show them how having team productivity tools like SharePoint and Office 365,
mm-hmm.
how they can use those tools to streamline their processes and make their life easier and make it easier for them to collaborate with with other people on their team, other people in other departments, and people outside of their organization, business partners.
Absolutely. And, you know, this data warehouse story did talk an awful lot about Office 365, but you know, the Access version of Access you're talking about, that would have been the Office 365 version.
Actually, well, I mean,
or was it on prem?
It was the client, the desktop application they were running on prem.
Right.
But I mean, they got it through their Office 365 subscription.
Right.
So,
but I think people get confused about that. That subscription does give you access to the on-prem software.
It does. And it deploys it in a way where it's going to update itself.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the challenges that I've seen my current client with, is that they did a managed deployment, it was an IT managed deployment, but now the way they chose to deploy it, it doesn't self-update, which probably is what most IT departments would have chosen in the past.
Yeah, or you're going to run your own deployment or your own update infrastructure
right.
as well, which
right.
some people want to do. You want to have tight control over all
but,
of that.
But, I mean, the message Microsoft seems to be putting forth currently is make your life easier, let us update office at will.
Right.
And so if
we promise we won't break it.
Right. And so if you install Office, the desktop applications from your 365 tenancy, as you go to office.com and install your Office desktop apps from there, they will auto update.
Right. Well, and I got to think that whole infrastructure you built there as IaaS means you're responsible for all of those updates, keeping the OS up to date, mm-hmm. keeping SQL Server up to date. Like, that stuff's not free. It's an ongoing expense.
And it
speaks to the strength of PaaS when it's there.
Right.
Is that set of obligations just goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would take time and energy to convert to PaaS.
Yeah.
But certainly, that is something that they should look at now.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, super fun to talk to you. Cool project, man. Yeah. Sure. There's more coming. Thanks again for being on Run As Radio.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you next week on Run As Radio.